Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Prepare yourself for Big News Wednesday. Or perhaps it's Big Fran Wednesday, because Francesca Fiorentini, host of The Bituation Room, is here. Francesca, how's it going?
Big Fran Wednesday. That just sounds like...
That doesn't sound great, yeah.
I don't know. That sounds like, the lunch lady who's going to serve you some... it's Big Fran Wednesday. We always say which slop she's got to give us. What's going on, people?
She's going to serve you some food and some wisdom.
Hell yeah.
She's gonna serve you.
Who's
but anyway,
got Thanksgiving leftovers? Let's go. Still.
I still have a baked potato, I think, that probably needs to be thrown away at this point. But anyway, very glad to have you here.
Thank you.
We're kind of thrown into chaos, but we've got you here. We've got a lot of fun. We've got an aftermath full of just stuff that is ripe for you to make fun of it, which I always want. So thank you for being here.
I'm ready to make fun of it. It's very difficult to make fun of a lot of things these days, so I need it. Please tell me. We're leading off with George Santos. But I
don't really. We actually will be. No, most of the first hour is pretty serious, unfortunately. But no, in the aftermath, a little bit lighter, a little bit more fun. So if you're listening to the podcast, go to the YouTube channel. You can watch those clips. They're there. It's fun. You can see what we look like. Did you know we have faces? You should look into it and see what they're like. But for those of you who are watching live, thank you for being here as well. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. And you can send us comments, tweets, and super chats. And if you send the right one, it might just get you a $100 Blue Apron gift card. And no, Hoovian Scarf saying John is the CM Punk of TYT. I don't even really understand that, but it's not the Blue Apron gift card comment. I'm going to give you a topic, possibly. I have been thinking that we are in a dark place as a country in a lot of different ways. But one of the ways that we as a political movement are a dark place is I feel like we are at kind of like a decade low in inspirational figures on the left. Like figures on the left that inspire you and motivate you, and they're out there and they're getting stuff done, and maybe they can do it. Like, I feel like we're kind of not doing well in that area. So if there's somebody that I'm forgetting, feel free to put that in a comment. Or just, your thoughts about that. Maybe you think I'm wrong, maybe you think I'm right, but you send us those comments. What name did you say?
I said
Sean Penn?
Yes, Sean Penn. ever since he sat down with El Chapo, Sean Penn has truly been sort of, the visionary for the left. No, Sean Fain. Don't forget Sean Fain. Don't forget 2028, General Strike. Let's go, people.
Okay.
Although we need a lot more before then. Yeah. What are Sean's?
Pick either one. They're equally inspirational. But anyway, we do have a lot to talk about. So
let's go.
We're just going to jump right into it.
You all want a soundbite. This is the third time we're going through this. I don't care.
Nobody cares. If this building, if this city put the effort to fixing our country the same way that they put on expelling me, we'd be in a better place. But this place is littered in political theater, and the American people are the ones paying the price.
Honestly, if there was someone who could speak with authority on political theater, I think it would have to be George Santos at this point. Come on, buddy. You just want to do the serious policy work, and everyone's distracting you with nonsense after years of making up every single part of your background while committing a bunch of crimes and enriching yourself in a number of different ways. Like, seriously, I talked about this the last time we talked about George Santos on the show. It is so easy, and I understand why people get caught up in the lies. But remember, fundamentally, the issue with George Santos is not just lies. He has robbed people to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars that he has taken from donors, from his campaign coffers, and put through a number of different shady means into his own pocket. He is a massive alleged criminal. So bear that in mind. But importantly, he might not be around for that much longer. Now, there's a couple different ways where potentially you could get rid of him. The one that the Republicans want, that apparently Speaker Johnson, according to this tweet in a closed leadership meeting, had been pushing for him to resign. That way, Republicans wouldn't have to take a tough vote, but tough for Mike Johnson, because apparently that's not going to happen. Watch this.
To set the record straight and put this in the record, I will not be resigning. And with that, I yield back the balance of my time.
I wish he could yield back all of the time that he has taken from us and from the country. But no, he's not going. And so we are going to have to do this the hard way, I guess, Francesca. And we're getting close. It's apparently going to happen on Thursday. We'll get to Mike Johnson's thoughts about that vote. But what do you think?
They're not going to expel him. That's what I think. And they just don't want to look like they are throwing down with an obvious criminal. I mean, other than their Lord and Savior, Donald Trump, you know, who's like criming on a whole other level. This is like really low, low level George Santos crimes. All I have to say is, I think if he wants to prove that he didn't have Botox, he should really put the glasses back on, because George Santos sans Botox is like, oh, buddy, your forehead don't move. You know what I mean? I made the mistake. I got Botox once, and then I was like, oh, I can't move my forehead. I need this to do, you know, expressions and stuff. Not gonna lie. And so, but my dude is like, he's giving, sorry guys, kids. He's giving some Matt Rife vibes, you know, like too many soft edges. Although Matt Rife, you know, notably like the chin. John probably has no idea what I'm talking about.
I don't know Matt Rife.
But I love, he loves the spotlight. You guys just want your sound bite. Like he just, Like there's so many things. Do you remember that he also like assaulted a staffer, you know, as many other Republicans have done? But you know, I say put it to a vote. I love that he's not resigning. I love that he's gonna force Republicans to basically, you know, look, they may oust him, but my prediction, since he said he's not gonna run for reelection, is that they're gonna wait.
Yeah.
Which safer? I mean, John, the seat isn't, who does the seat, I believe, is it the governor that appoints his successor? I mean, his replacement if he resigns? That's, I believe no, that look, is the case.
Yes, I believe so. But also it definitely comes down to when this would be happening. And theoretically, the expelling is sooner rather than later. So maybe that simplifies the process. But yeah, it's complicated to make the predictions, because, you know, theoretically, there's a lot of Democrats that would vote for this, although they could do the sort of cynical, pragmatic thing of, no, leave him around so that you can run against him. Not only for that, assuming that he did actually run for re-election, or just that he was still in elected office, you could theoretically do that. But there's also a lot of New York Republicans that they don't want to be associated with him anymore, so they could vote to expel him. A lot of Republicans might not want that being an extra weight around their necks. But yeah, there's a lot of factors. It's very difficult to predict. I think that we might have finally crossed sort of the critical mass. But the real question is where the Republicans are going to come down on this. And to that end, I want to go to a little bit more video of the Speaker of the House.
So what we've said as a leadership team is we're going to allow people to vote their conscience. I think it's the only appropriate thing we can do. We've not whipped the vote, and we wouldn't. I trust that people will make that decision thoughtfully and in good faith. I personally have real reservations about doing this. I'm concerned about a precedent that may be set for that. So everybody's working through that, and we'll see how they vote tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, no. I mean, I'm super serious, and if you are being critical of Republicans, then I'm going to say whatever jibber jabber you need to think that we take law and order seriously. But I'm also not going to call for them to actually oust him because of like precedent or whatever. And yeah, it's mealy mouthed and do whatever you want. I'm sure he would prefer that he just like in the closed door setting, he's a session. He said that he wants him to step down. I'm sure that he would love him to be gone. It doesn't look good for the party to expel him, but it also doesn't look good for the party to still have him around. So Mike Johnson is in a difficult position there. Bear that in mind. And additional factors that you should consider. The last time that they had one of these votes, because this will be tomorrow, the third vote to expel him, even many Democrats did not vote for it, including Jamie Raskin, saying that, you know, this is prior to the ethics report coming out. Like, we don't know for sure exactly what he has done. And so it would set a dangerous precedent to, you know, kick someone out for lying a bunch. I mean, glass houses on the lying in Congress. But Jamie Raskin says that now He wants him to resign, but he will vote for his expulsion if he doesn't. And so maybe there are a lot of Republicans that are following the Jamie Raskin way of thinking about this. And also, I looked up the timetable because you had asked, you know, how would he be replaced? Well, the governor would have to announce a special election within just 10 days. And in less than 3 months after that, you would have the special election. So that would be coming quicker than I actually expected that it would. So bear that in mind. But what are your thoughts?
I mean, also, he like loves drama. Again, this is he's a little Trumpette. Like, so he wants this to continue. He's not going to resign in shame. But it's true. Like, I thought it was cool, not cool. I thought it was good that Jamie Raskin and other Democratic representatives were like, look, we need to wait and see, you know, what these charges are specifically, whether he's going to be found guilty of them. And then I think the amount of charges and the fact that this is only going to be a massive distraction and very drawn out. It's like, yeah, you should resign in shame. But again, this is the Republican Party in the year 2023. How many rape allegations and or actual proven sexual, what was it? What was the one that Trump was actually accused of? Assault or basically rape of E. Jean Carroll. This dude's not resigning. He's still running for president. This is so it's like, yeah, why not Santos? Keep going, dude. I stand.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, like it's this weird intersection of what's the thing that they claimed to do, combined with how much power do they have, combined with wait, how much does the base and Fox News like them right now? And so you can get away with way more than what George Santos has done. I mean, look, the lies, obviously Trump has lied more than George Santos could ever hope to, including George Santosian type lies, like making up stuff about his life.
But also,
If the crimes are assault, because as you pointed out, there's those allegations against Santos too. Well, Trump has done, you know, way more of that than George Santos ever could. And if the other crimes are stealing from your base and from your supporters, well, Trump has done way more of that than George Santos ever could. He steals millions upon millions of dollars from these people, thinking they're suckers the whole time.
Yeah.
But Trump has more power and he could be president again and the base really likes him. So he gets away with it, whereas George Santos could perhaps be expelled. It's a sick system. Anyway, I want to move on to a very different topic because there's a lot of news to cover. So let's jump into this. Is President Biden finally changing his tone when it talks to Israel's attacks on Gaza? Well, consider this piece of evidence. He tweeted, Hamas unleashed a terrorist attack because they fear nothing more than Israelis and Palestinians living side by side in peace. To continue down the path of terror, violence, killing and war is to give Hamas what they seek. We can't do that. Which does not specifically call for any change to the status quo. It's not saying that they're going to pressure Israel in any particular way or anything, but it implies in a very vague way, stop attacking Gaza because that's what Hamas wants. Now, again, he's not explicitly saying that, but you can read that into what he said. I will throw out before we discuss, like, you can't just say, hey, stop the bombing because over 15,000 civilians have died, including thousands of kids. You have to say, stop the bombing because that's what Hamas wants. Do you really need to do like reverse psychology? Can you not just stand up for the inherent sanctity of life? But this is how he's gotten to this still weak, still just mediocre. Let's not have war. I don't know. Should we draw anything from this? Are you excited by this, Francesca?
I think it was a very interesting tweet, and I was trying to read into it as well. First things first, if he's talking to Israel, there's other ways. I believe you're in constant communication with the government of Israel. I believe that you've been in lockstep with their military incursion into Gaza and the murder of 15,000 people, the vast majority of whom are not only innocent, but are women and children. By Israel's own estimates, only 1,000 to 3,000 people killed were actually Hamas fighters. Let's put that aside, but look at the language that he's using. Terror, violence, killing, to continue that down that path. Do we think that this president is actually referring to Israel's actions, which he has justified as moral and right and what's necessary and in order to eliminate Hamas and justified? Do you think he'd ever characterize them as terror, violence, killing. No, it's collateral damage. It's Palestinians somehow just die. You know, they pull down the missiles onto their own homes. Like that is what makes me think that this tweet is actually maybe directed to Palestinians and or people like us, progressives and peace activists in the United States who want to see a permanent ceasefire. So I don't know who this is for, John. I am just like, it projects weakness no matter how you cut it.
Yeah, look, I think that that is a perfectly appropriate speculative read on who it's targeted for. The major issue here is that it is not clear. And so everyone's going to read into it slightly differently. One way, maybe if I'm trying super hard to be like devil's advocate or whatever, is it's intended to be read by everyone. So part of some of the words are for one side, some are for the other. So he's definitely saying, so if we've got terror, violence, if we could bring it up, terror, violence, killing, war. Okay. So the war, that's Israel. Israel is engaging in war. Because by definition, from their point of view, Gaza or the Palestinians can't because they don't have an actual military. The killing, maybe he'd apply to Israel. And that, again, might be too clear a condemnation. But then you get towards like violence, terror. He almost certainly, yes, is not using those terms for Israel. So maybe it's intended to run the gamut from Hamas all the way to Israel. I don't know. But either way, even like regardless of which of these interpretations is true, Jesus, you can't do more. I mean, you can't like a tweet when you are in direct communication and when you can use actual, you know, like you can use actual pressure. So he says at the end, we can't do that. And again, it's a phrase that is so vague that you could read anything you want into it. But one way we could read into that is we can't do that. The terror, the killing, the war, but we are doing that as a country. We are providing aid and arms and selling bombs and guidance systems. We are a part of that killing and a part of that war and a part of the terror that people in Gaza are experiencing. And you and I can't immediately change it. I can't press a button and stop being a part of that. But Joe Biden arguably could do a lot single-handedly to change that. And we haven't really seen that. What we've seen is this tweet.
I mean, and also let's just like, I understand we want to just say Hamas is a terrorist organization that acts completely irrationally and is like psychotic and they're all on PCP. That's fine. However, there was just a hostage exchange that Hamas engaged with via the government of Qatar with Israel. And there was an exchange of Palestinian prisoners with Israeli prisoners that Hamas took. There was a deliberate ask there. I understand that what happened on October 7th was absolutely unjustifiable and inexcusable. However, if you're looking at what they actually want, there was a purpose to free Palestinian prisoners. There is a broader purpose to end the siege of Gaza that is prevented, not just in the last 2 months, but for however 7 years now, the entrance of vital fuel, medicine, you know, anything to rebuild homes from other wars that Israel has launched on Gaza. Like, whether you like it or not, there are demands, and those have a lot to do with Israel's treatment towards Palestinians writ large, whether in Gaza or in the West Bank. But if you treat, you know, so-called terrorists as nothing but irrational actors, well, then you have no choice but to continue murdering as many civilians in the hopes that your odds are going to be better than what they've been, which is about 10% of everyone killed has been a militant. So we shall see, John. I mean, this is so, it's so sad and it's so painful. However, what gives me hope is that the pressure is working. Calls to Congress are working. It's how we got that, you know, the pause, I guess. But again, maybe that's just the government of Qatar who was doing that. But to encourage everyone to not lose faith in this.
Yeah. If I can just quickly add on to what you said. So obviously governments are going to have to, like the way that you colloquially talk about like these movements or whatever is very different than the calculations that a government has to make in terms of its strategy, in terms of diplomacy and war.
Right.
But while yes, you can point out that there are demands or there are goals, policy goals, ideological goals. I think it's very clear that nothing like October 7th is acceptable in pursuit of literally any goals. Political military, you can identify that there is a goal to it, but morally, completely unacceptable.
But
in pursuit
to say
of those
that
goals,
to say that terror and violence is all that Hamas wants is actually just not true. Do you know what I mean?
No, like, I understand
that's just
that.
Yes. Not, so it's like we can either say it's true or it's not true. No one said, I literally said in what I just said that what happened was unjustifiable.
Yes.
So
yes.
Period. But so like
super clear.
But like if they want more terror, no, they don't want more terror. It is a political project. It's a political organization that wants.
Does it not remind you, Francesca, of, you know, they hate us for our freedoms? It's like
100%. That's all it is.
Are we 4 years old?
Yeah.
Like we can use our brains. And I want to throw one additional thing out just so everyone bears this in mind. And we've been sort of alluding to this about whenever we talk about civilian casualties in Gaza, I try to point out that the casualties now, while horrific, are perhaps nothing compared to what is going to come, because you don't just destroy an entire region's infrastructure and then it's back. Elon Musk said he's going to rebuild it. That's not how that works, literally at all. And now we are seeing some actual like sort of previews. The UN says deaths from disease in Gaza could outstrip the deaths from war. So long term, you could have more people dying from the obvious consequences of destroying a region's ability to provide clean water, electricity, any sort of aid whatsoever. It could end up killing more people. Bear in mind, 4 out of 5 residents in Gaza have fled their homes, according to the UN. 1.8 million people. And we already see the effects of it. Diarrhea rates increased by 45 times compared with the same period last year, as well as respiratory infections, hygiene such as lice as well, and the ability to deal with these things, which for children can be deadly, very limited, because almost 3/4 of hospitals in Gaza and 2/3 of primary healthcare clinics have shut down because of damage from hostilities or lack of fuel. And even if they could run, obviously there's a lack of so many of the other supplies that you need to run these sorts of things. So yeah, absolutely horrific, those who have already died, but we have now locked in thousands more deaths that will happen no matter what. But at least if there is aid, maybe that number can be limited at least a little bit.
Yeah, who says that it could be as bad, if not worse, than Israeli strikes. The lack of water, clean potable water, and the lack of food. There will be famine, there will be disease. And somehow we've all conditioned ourselves to say that Palestinians deserve it because they're animals and Hamas is a terrorist organization. Mm-hmm. Ergo, 30,000 to 50,000 people will have to die or more. And I think everyone needs to morally reckon with what we're actually saying and understand how many children and families are dying because of this. This is unconscionable and it needs to stop.
Yeah. It reminds me, it reminds me of Yemen, basically. Like it feels very similar to that in terms of like protracted bombing that destroys the infrastructure. You necessarily end up with famine and outbreaks of disease and the inability to deal with it. And at least in this case, there's a little bit more international focus on it. For some reason, Yemen, nobody wanted to talk about that except for a couple Rokana.
And the dystopian nature of it is that it's happening literally right next door to one of, you know, the biggest economies and militaries in the Middle East and in the world, like Israel, right next door to people in swimming pools and apartments and just like chill and living their lives and making fun of Palestinians on TikTok. And like, I mean, it is wild. And this is that dissonance that is occupation and ethnic cleansing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad that you pointed out, you know, like the horror of how many have died, particularly the children. Like we obviously really care. And I assume that the vast majority of those in the audience really care. But even we run up against the sort of built-in psychological limitations of human brains in that, however horrified you might be by hearing a story of like one child dying in the news, you do not have the cognitive capability to scale that up to 4,000 kids. Mm-hmm. You just don't, like you cannot be 4,000 times more horrified, even though you probably should be, because right now children are dying and more will be dead between now and our next show. And we're horrified, but horrified enough? I don't think so. Not based on what I'm seeing. And I'm not talking about us or you guys, I'm saying from people who have actual power to change the situation. Anyway, with that said, we, I think, necessarily need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be lightening things up. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few. We're going to move on to other news. We talked about some really serious stuff. I would like to talk about some nonsense. So with that, let's jump into this.
Cheney, Mar-a-Lago, what the hell, Kevin? Kevin McCarthy. They're really worried. Trump's not eating. So they asked me to come see him. Cheney, what? You went to Mar-a-Lago because Trump's not eating? McCarthy, yeah, he's really depressed.
That is an excerpt from Liz Cheney's book about why Kevin McCarthy, not too long after the events of January 6th and after Kevin McCarthy publicly criticized Donald Trump and implied that he was responsible for the violence of January 6th, traveled down to Mar-a-Lago to go talk to Trump. And the explanation is he needed to go. Trump was really depressed about it. And I know that period was really hard for Trump. So hard that he's not even eating. He's lost his appetite. And look, I think this overall story deserves analysis. I understand that everybody's going to focus on the food part. Even Jake Tapper had a little bit of fun with it. Take a look at this.
I love the one of McCarthy saying like that he had to go down to Mar-a-Lago because Donald was depressed and he wasn't eating.
He's not eating.
First of all, that alone I find surprising, but just because he's a man of healthy appetites, I don't mean that disparagingly, but the idea that he would even try to peddle that malarkey to Liz Cheney, I find amazing.
What does Jake Tapper think I don't mean that disparagingly means? That's exactly why you were saying that. That was disparagingly. And by the way, I don't even understand the point that Jake Tapper is making, because we already know from Trump's medical exams what his stats are. If he loses appetite, that is a concern, because he's 6'3", 215. That's what's been reported. At that height, he doesn't have much excess weight to lose. Look, I'm making fun of Trump for lying about the situation. That said, I am going to be a little bit of a Buzz Killington. The entire like DC like infrastructure is just going to use this as an opportunity for a round of like fat shaming Donald Trump or whatever. When I get it, Donald Trump is bad, but there's worse things. Anyway, I'm Buzz Killington. You're Francesca Fiorentini. What do you think?
I am. No, well, look, people in the chat are going to get mad if I call him a fat POS who, you know, it just slimes around Mar-a-Lago. Just his, you know, man titties dragging behind him, sadly, as he listens to memories. But look, he's not starving. We all know Trump has like Halloween candy under his mattress. You know, he's got like Sour Patch Kids and he's got little mini Snickers.
Yeah,
and he's like fun size would be huge. You know, he's like, he's crying and eating his little candies, which is great. Look, everyone has their little stash. But it is, I, you know, here's what I will say about this story. I don't care about whether he's eating or not eating. It makes me happy that Trump is sad. So any story that's like Trump was depressed, I immediately feel good in my heart. Does that make me a bad person? I don't think so.
I mean, a case could be made. No. Yes. Look, am I a perfect person? No. Do I draw some pleasure from the worst person in the world, perhaps, being depressed?
Yeah.
Kind of. Yes, I do actually draw a little bit.
He knows he lost.
Yes. And look, he didn't get to be president anymore. Like, he still did a whole bunch of damage and he might well do more damage. But for a period, he didn't get what he wanted. It was one of the first times in his life he didn't get what he wanted. And that's good, because what he wants is terrible and he's terrible and everything is terrible. More importantly, though, I don't like Liz Cheney's reporting it in the book as if it's, maybe she buys it. I don't know. I don't know that I accept that that's why Kevin McCarthy went. Was Trump a little bit depressed? Sure. But this was Kevin McCarthy going to kiss the ring. That's what he was doing. Kevin McCarthy, like some Republicans in the immediate aftermath of January 6th, which was, it's now all been normalized that we just have coups sometimes. But at that point, I will remind you, some people were like, dear God, have we crossed a line that we should never have crossed? And even some Republicans like Kevin McCarthy briefly were like, oh God, this is going to make us look terrible. Trump bears responsibility for what he did. And I think it's reprehensible that All of you in the base don't really mind this. You just wish that it had been successful. Oh, well, I actually don't have a problem anymore. A couple weeks have gone by. I'm going to go travel down to Mar-a-Lago and have a nice dinner with Donald Trump. And that's the part that really bothers me. It's that was kissing the ring again. This was crossing that line again. What do you think?
Whoa. The timeline is after Jan 6th. I'm thinking this is the first week.
No, I think this is
okay.
Yeah,
that I'm is pretty if, sure
that's what it is.
We all know that yes, after Jan 6th, he did go down, and yeah, exactly as you said, John, waited a little bit and then was like, "Oh, I'm needed. Okay, I guess it's not bad." Yeah, and we just do coups.
Okay, really fast.
It felt like it might have been before, but no, you might be right.
Wait. Let me explain. So there are references to him talking to Trump right after the election.
Yeah.
I am uncertain because the book covers a lot of ground. It is possible that that's what it is. So in that case, perhaps it's just you get the shot in Freud. I'm more worried. Regardless, Kevin McCarthy did go down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring of Donald Trump. He may not have had this cover story about it, but that regardless is the part of what Kevin McCarthy did that I find more troubling. But anyway, I've got daddy baby brain. I apologize. Continue.
No. I'm the one who's like asking you the hard questions. This story, I mean, it's just Liz Cheney selling her book. Let's be real.
That is also true.
Here's my question with these books. These, like, for lack of a better term, I don't know. They're not rhinos. They're all just like former Trumpers. They're people who love Trump's policies, but don't like his veneer. They're people who used to work for Trump. I mean, Omarosa, let's be real. She was the first one out with a book, if I'm not mistaken. Even Sean Spicer had a book. So many books. People, what if I did a podcast and I read all of these books you didn't have to? Would anyone listen to that? Think of the sad libs who watch like CNN, who like devour these books and are like, Liz Cheney's amazing, you know, like, or like the Dick Cheneys of the world. Like, who's reading this? I guess that's the dad. So the dad.
It might get you a million followers on Twitter. I don't know. There are some people who have built that sort of a following that I don't understand. But anyway, you're gonna have to try that out for yourself. But that said, I think we do have to move on to other news. I would love to talk more about Kevin McCarthy and what he ended up doing, but really fast. Apollo Racer says, starting to wonder how long daddy baby brain can be used as an excuse. I'm also wondering that, and I'm going to test the limits of it. So buckle up for that.
I still use it, but I'm the mommy baby, so I get like an extension.
Yeah, that seems rougher. But anyway, we have other news, so why don't we jump into that? The co-founder of a popular and influential student, young Republican pro-Trump group, this is Students for Trump, was arrested and charged with assault last week. Here is a picture of Ryan Fournier, 27-year-old who helped launch Students for Trump, accused of grabbing a woman's arm and striking her in the forehead with a firearm, which is just such a horrific phrase to have to read. And to know that a person that had political influence, and as you saw in that picture, was meeting with the president, is alleged to have done. Now, these are allegations. He has not been convicted of this. So let's bear that in mind as we go forward and analyze this. But as of right now, he faces two misdemeanor charges: domestic assault on a female and assault with a deadly weapon, has been released on a $2,500 bond and is scheduled to appear in court on the 18th of December. So we don't have to wait too long for that. As I said, he did help launch Students for Trump with another guy who also was found guilty of impersonating a lawyer. So a little bit of a suits tie in there. But anyway, right now he leads the group Radical Alert, which aims to expose, quote, radicals and their hate, which has taken over American college campuses. And that is the true thing that is dragging down America. It's radical hate, not pistol whipping your domestic partner, allegedly. Francesca, what do you think?
Yeah, radical hate. I'm sure they're going after the racist who shot three Palestinian American boys in Vermont over Thanksgiving weekend, who called himself a radical, right? Radical Patriot. Is that the kind of? Oh no, but he's got Patriot in there. Okay. Oh, it's for your team. Oh, okay. Shooting Arabs is fine. I mean, it's just, yeah. This is par for the course. This is what it is. And again, if there are Republican women listening, this is your party. Honestly, I don't believe that, like, I don't want to, like, Nancy Pelosi whisper to the good Republicans, but I do think that, like, women who are conservative should really attempt to understand what Christian nationalism means for them. It means total control over their own bodies in terms of reproductive rights, but it also means being secondary to your partner, to your spouse, being struck with a gun, being threatened, being brutalized. It means being Steven Crowder's wife, right? I mean, thank God she got out of that. It means being berated when you're, however, 8 months pregnant with twins. I mean, this is that sort of Western male chauvinism that within it not only has a lot of anti-Semitism, a lot of Islamophobia and racism, a lot of xenophobia against immigrants, and most fundamentally misogyny and sexism. And this is part of MAGA ideology. So are we okay with that? Because I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad that you pointed that out, because look, again, allegations, bear that in mind for everything that we say, but we know what the right is, and we know what they think about women. We do. You can't deny it. I know that there are some women, as you point out, there are female conservatives, there are female Republicans or whatever, there are female influencers who preach like willful, voluntary female subjugation. And they're making bank off of telling women that they should date guys like this and get pistol whipped in the forehead, allegedly.
Yes.
And the men present it, like they draw other men in by presenting this as like strength. This is the weakest, most pathetic, whiny. I saw that Crowder thing. Like this is supposed to be alpha. This is supposed to be strength. This is so utter. This is worms crawling in the dirt who are so weak that they have to control through force of law everyone else, so they have some chance of appearing authoritative and strong. And I'm just going to throw out a couple of tweets. I just did a little bit of searching because, you know, if you are the sort of person to allegedly pistol whip someone with a gun, you've probably given your thoughts about guns in the past. So Ryan had previously tweeted his thoughts about, oh, Alec Baldwin doesn't know about gun safety. Everybody's having fun with that tragedy. Gun safety is just pistol whipping the people nearby you, allegedly, not shooting them. Had also had a tweet about paying cash for firearms so that you won't be caught up in invasive tracking systems. So that's not scary at all now with these allegations out there. Had previously tweeted, guns empower law-abiding people. Gun laws empower criminals. Yep, everyone with a gun is just law-abiding. They don't do anything wrong. They don't hurt anyone. They don't potentially kill anyone or anything like that. And had, as everyone does, bragged about being a law-abiding gun owner. Yeah, every gun owner is responsible and law-abiding until they're not. Until they make a mistake and accidentally shoot someone or purposefully shoot someone or hurt someone. Now, in this case, he's not alleged to have shot someone, but we have done so many stories like this, and there's always commentary like that lurking in the background. Anyway, we'll find out the next step in a couple of weeks. Stay tuned. Again, allegations. Anyway, with that said, I think we have to take our last break of the hour. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. During the social breaks, everyone, if you're listening to the podcast, we sometimes give away Blooper gift cards for great comments. And apparently, May Money to Building has not received one previously. So let's rectify that. May Money to Building just needs to send an email to rewards@tyt.com with their handle, and the comment will be logged and you'll get it. So bada bing, bada boom. And with that, why don't we jump into some more comments starting, or more stories, I suppose, starting with this.
Why do you think that Chicago has become America's largest outdoor shooting range?
That is Senator John Kennedy, who is questioning Dr. Megan Ranney of the Yale School of Public Health on a Senate hearing on gun crime. And she's going to respond to what he's saying there. And you've heard comments like this. You know the dog whistle that is there. But I want to give you just a little bit more of what Kennedy had to say before the response. Take a look at this.
Do you think it's because of Chicago citizens who have no criminal record, but who have a gun in their home for protection or perhaps for hunting? Or do you think it's because of a finite group of criminals who have rap sheets as long as King Kong's arm.
He's one of the weirdest people. I think he went to like really good schools and like, I think he's a lawyer, but like he either has become one of the dumbest people in public office or he does a really good job of playing one of the dumbest, weirdest people in public office. But anyway, it turns out there are some issues with the framing of his question and his assumptions that are baked into that. So here is the response from the actual expert.
So Mississippi, Louisiana, and Missouri actually have higher firearm death rates. Obviously, there's certain...
What about Chicago?
So I don't live in Chicago. It's not my primary area of research.
You don't have an opinion on that?
I think there's easy access to firearms combined with environmental conditions, lack of great education. There have actually been studies showing that when you green vacant lots and repair abandoned buildings in urban neighborhoods, you see decreases in gunshots, in violence, as well as in stress and depression in the neighborhoods around them.
No disrespect, Doc, but that... sounds a lot like word salad to me.
Word salad, and he doesn't abide word salad or actual salad. He doesn't get any vitamins, which is why his brain is rotting in his skull. She made great points there that I think demand some interesting follow-ups. Her overall point that he refuses to acknowledge because it blows a massive hole in his racist framing of the issue is that those states have higher gun death rates than Chicago. Now, I understand why people like Senator Kennedy want to just focus on Chicago and not on the fact that the higher rates are in a number of these states. In fact, why don't we show you? This is data from the CDC, the states with the highest firearm mortality rates per 100,000 in 2021. And I'm noticing a pattern to the partisan labeling of these states there. And you know what? Why don't we go all the way down to the end of the list, the lowest gun death rates. And you're going to notice, oh, there's a bit of a pattern there. It's so weird that pattern is so clear. Weird that he didn't want to address any of that and just said that it was word salad. Francesca, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's great they're actually discussing this in the Senate, right? The fact that we're having this hearing, we don't have hearings on firearm deaths. We don't have hearings on police deaths and things like that. So I'm glad. But of course, when you have, the foghorn, leghorn of the Senate, Kennedy, all he wants to hear is one word. Okay, I'm gonna talk about colors, all right? There's yellow, there is green. What is the color here that I'm wearing? It's white, sir. No, it's black. Let's talk, like, come on. He just wants to talk about race. He's so racist. He's trying anything. And like, unless you're attributing this to black Americans and some extra bone in their body that gives them the crime, but right, like, I know what I'm saying sounds insane, but that's literally what he wants her to say. That is where he wants this hearing to go. And it's just wild that we're like, why can't we have nice things in this country? Why can't we like have gun buyback programs? Why can't we have green spaces in urban areas? Why can't we stop gun violence? And it's like, oh, because white supremacists and racists like John Kennedy, what's his name? John Kennedy?
John Kennedy, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, foghorn, leghorn. They want to just blame this on people's race.
100%. By the way, I looked it up. He went to Vanderbilt, the University of Virginia School of Law, and then Oxford University. That's a resume as long as King Kong's dong. Okay. Okay, Foghorn.
You said by the dong. Way,
I know. I think we're allowed to say that, right? Am I going to get in trouble? Anyway, I didn't go to Oxford. I'm a dumb donkey. So, by the way, we showed you the list of the states that had the highest mortality rate from firearms and the ones that had the lowest. But I don't think that actually gets across how big the gap is. Massachusetts, which has the lowest firearm mortality rate, has a rate of 3.4 per 100,000 people. 3.4. The highest, which is Mississippi, is 33.9. That's 10 times higher. So many of these states have 8, 9, 10 times higher than the ones on the lower end of the spectrum.
That is from Louisiana.
Yeah, and Louisiana is at 29.1. Now, I understand that you can't just say it's a Democratic city or it's a group of black people or whatever, but like maybe you should look at that because this seems like clear evidence that laws can have an actual impact. Maybe not everywhere we'd like to, maybe not instantly, maybe firearm deaths don't totally go away, but it seems like it can have an impact. By the way, everyone, you don't need to fact check me about gorilla anatomy. I understand that they're not necessarily impressive in that respect. But anyway, that said,
oh my God,
we're gonna roast the gorillas right now,
people.
Okay, with that said, we need to jump to another story, arguably even more ridiculous. Fresh off of spending a couple of weeks boosting anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, Elon Musk has decided to play the hit, so to speak. For the last 2 weeks, he has boosted the Pizzagate conspiracy theory on 5 separate occasions on the social media site that he owns. And I want to show you sort of a quick evolution of how that worked. So initially, you know, he had been criticized for Media Matters for the things that he said. And rather than thinking about why he said those things, he decided to attack Media Matters and said that Media Matters, the journalistic enterprise, is evil. And eventually some rando responds, "Did you know that David Brock was the boyfriend of James Alefantis, the owner of Comet Ping Pong Pizza? Yes, a Pizzagate restaurant. Alefantis, a pizza shop owner at the time, was on GQ's 50 most powerful people in DC list." And the richest man in the world who owns the site just said, "Weird." That is weird for that rando's rant. It's super weird that you replied to it at all, but you just accept the Pizzagate thing. And since then, it's actually gotten worse because Elon Musk, like Joe Rogan and so many others, just whatever you say at them, they believe, and it becomes a core part of their personality. And so it eventually accelerated almost instantly to him putting out this meme. Pizzagate is real. No, it isn't. We have experts. They traffic children. But we have experts. Your expert just went to jail for child porn. Oh my God. That means Pizzagate was real. Did you know that? If you just accept a whole bunch of things that aren't true, it means that it's real. And here is what he's talking about. So people were trying to say that this award-winning BBC journalist who debunked Pizzagate is now in jail for child porn, ergo Pizzagate real. Except that that's not true at all. The journalist who is going to jail for the child pornography was not remotely involved in fact-checking Pizzagate for ABC at all. And even if that was the case, and it's not, that doesn't mean that there's a basement at Comet Pizza, which doesn't have a basement, where children were being sold to the Clintons. But for Elon Musk, who I will remind you is a genius, that is proof positive enough that he is spreading it to his over 100 million Twitter followers without a single ounce of critical thought necessary. And so many of them will accept it. They now believe that that's true. Francesca, what do you think?
He is having and continues to have a midlife crisis and makes it all of our business. Mm-hmm. He is so thirsty. He is so sad for all the children he has. Clearly, he needs more love. He's bored out of his mind. But it's just like, I mean, talk about a dad who does like has permanent dad brain and definitely has not lifted a finger in those relationships. Allegedly, I guess. But like, you know, he just got back from Israel trying to smooth over the fact that he regularly replies to and boosts conspiracy theorists that are anti-Semitic on his platform that he owns. It's just, again, and going back to Pizzagate, it's just like, what are we doing, dog? Like, are you just bored? Are you like, yep, Someone's up in your DMs? Like, think about the DMs that he must reply to. He's constantly on it. And I'm just like, when do we leave? Like, what do we do? Yeah. This is all bad. Like, and he deleted that tweet. I looked for it, the meme tweet.
Yeah, but it's stupid.
Right. But he also knows, John, I think, that if he wants to eventually, which he does, run for president, which honestly, I think maybe worse than Tucker Carlson running for president, that he's got to tap the like conspiracy theory, you know, tree and like see what comes out, shake the tree and see what comes down.
Yeah. Yeah. I think pineapples came down and hit him in the head. Yes. I think that's what it is. Gee, God, he is so simple minded. How do people still think that he's, I'm not going to say genius, how do they think he's moderately smart at this point.
Right.
I don't understand it.
Right.
But by the way, while he doesn't deserve any of the credit that people get, I do want to give credit to one person who is actually quite intelligent. That is Ken Klippenstein, who all the way back in 2018 tweeted, "How funny would it be if Elon Musk becomes a Pizzagate guy?" Took a few years, but once again, Ken Klippenstein got him. So anyway, that's the richest man in the world, constantly checking his phone to signal boost the dumbest conspiracy theorist in the country. Right now, he's refreshing his replies. Did you know that? It's sad. Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We've got much more to come in the aftermath, though. We're going to lighten things up, talk a little bit about the holidays. And so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.